McDestin, he still had a pathway back to the light. Unlike Destin, Evan wasn't ruthless. At least, he wasn't ruthless enough. When Francis took their goods to market, Ferris often went with her so he could speak with the captains and bosses down at the docks. He was always angling for a job. It was odd. Though ships came and went, their new boarder had been in port for months now without a contract. Destin could tell the pirate was frustrated, but his own feelings were mixed. His leg was nearly healed, and the barn was repaired, and so there was no reason Ferris needed to stay on. The problem wasn't jealousy of the affection that grew between his mother and the pirate. The problem was that the feelings Destin had for Ferris were something more than brotherly. One minute Destin would be thinking, "When is he going to leave?" And the next he'd be thinking, "What am I going to do if he leaves?" Destin had learned from a young age that connections are vulnerabilities. If he ever forgot it, the general had reminded him over and over again. He'd learned his lesson well, that love was as risky as mercy. Destin had been a soldier since he was 10 years old, and this pirate was the most dangerous adversary he'd ever faced. Destin took steps to protect himself and his mother. As soon as he was able to get around on his injured leg, he searched through the pirate's meager belongings, finding nothing of value save the broken pendant. No bag of money, no pouch of poison, no correspondence from the general. That could mean nothing more than the fact that the pirate was too smart to keep anything incriminating in the house. Next, Destin took his investigation to town. At the dock boss's office, he introduced himself as Dennis Rocheford, pretending he was looking for a pilot. A sharp-faced man named Kadar suggested several prospects. When Destin inquired about Lucky Ferris, saying he'd heard good things about the young captain, Kadar had informed him that Ferris was an ungrateful, greedy, unreliable bastard he should steer clear of. Destin knew that wasn't true. Whatever Ferris was, he wasn't lazy. But clearly, Kadar wasn't sending any work Ferris's way. An investigative trip to Deepwater Court proved more fruitful. There, Destin learned that the Empress in the North was offering a very large reward for the live delivery of a particular 16-year-old boy who might be using the name Evan Strangward. The boy was described as a weather mage and sailor with hair like flax, streaks of silver and blue, and sea-green eyes. Well, not those words exactly, but the message was clear. Destin had noticed that Ferris always wore a watch cap when he went to town, even in hot weather. Destin noticed everything. So the pirate had secrets, a past he was holding close. Secrets could be useful, in particular those you know about somebody else. Why would the Empress be offering such a large reward for a pirate without a ship? Then he answered his own question. Because he's a weather mage, called a stormcaster along the desert coast. A stormcaster whose skills were improving under Destin's tutelage. Destin credited practice with the amulet more than any instruction he was able to give. He found himself scheming to somehow acquire an amulet for Ferris, even though that might leave a trail that could be followed back to Tarvos. With some questions answered, Destin continued slipping off to town on his own. He was putting together a plan, a legacy of sorts. He discussed it with his mother, but only the part he knew she'd approve of. She'd signed on immediately. One morning, he invited Ferris to go with him into town.
"You want me to go into town with you?"
It was no wonder the pirate was surprised. Now that his leg had healed, Destin often spent days away from the cottage, but never invited Ferris along. That's what I said, isn't it? They left the horse and wagon at a livery and walked down to the harbor front. Ferris went to meet with whomever he always met with, while Destin searched out his contact at the boatyard and made final plans. When Ferris returned from his meeting, it was clear from his expression that there was no good news.
Nothing, Destin said. Nothing, Ferris said, jaw set, green eyes glittering with anger. It seems I'm going to have to find another port to sail from.
Ferris had not shared any details so far, and Destin hadn't asked, but now seemed to be the time.
What's the problem? He said. I've pissed off the dock boss, Ferris said. Now he won't give me any work. What did you do? I refuse to be cheated, so he's teaching me a lesson. You cheeky bastard, Destin said with a thin smile. Here, come with me. I have something to show you that might cheer you up.
Looking mystified, Ferris followed Destin to the far end of the harbor. There, in one of the slips, lay a ruin of a ship, an ancient ketch that had seen hard times. It had been there since before Destin and his mother arrived in Tarvos. He'd tracked down the owner, who had owned the slip she occupied since before Kadar came to town. He'd refused to sell his dock space, because then he would have to make a decision about this ship that had belonged to his father and was named after his dead sister, Araya. He couldn't bring himself to beach and break the old ship, but he might consider selling her for the right price. Destin knew for a fact that her hull was intact. He'd paid off the watch who'd allowed him to climb inside and inspect her from bow to stern. He didn't know much about ships, but he knew quite a bit about construction. Her deck, however, was a disaster. At some point, the ship had caught fire. Though the blaze had been confined above decks, it had charred the masts, the rigging, and the quarterdeck.
Captain Ferris, Destin said, running his hand along the mooring line with studied nonchalance. What do you think of this ship?
Ferris stared at it, hands on hips.
That's not a ship, he said finally. That is a cautionary tale.
He looked up at Destin.
Why do you ask? I'm thinking of buying it, Destin said, his confidence already dwindling. I've not signed papers yet, and no money has changed hands, so if you... What would you do with a ship? I thought...
Destin cleared his throat.
I thought we could work on it together. You built a barn under my supervision. I could build a ship under yours. And then what?
The pirate persisted, staring at him, eyes narrowed, as if trying to peer through his skin to the soul inside. Pirates don't have plans, Destin thought, exasperated. Soldiers and engineers have plans.
I hoped that once she was seaworthy, you'd sign on as captain and partner.
There, he'd said it. He waited, pretending to watch the frigate birds circling the harbor. Ferris turned away from the ship and faced Destin.
Partner, you provide expertise and labor, and I provide the capital. We split the profits.
Something had dawned in Ferris's face. Hope mingled with a healthy dose of wariness.
But why would you do that for me? It's strictly business, pirate, Destin said, shrugging, not wanting to seem too hot for the deal. As you keep saying, this is a hard place to make a living by farming. I want to diversify. And who wouldn't want to partner with a weather mage?
Ferris looked sideways at Destin, unable to hide his eagerness.
You've inspected her?
Destin nodded.
I believe the decking is sound, except for a bad patch just behind the mizzen.
Evan put one foot on the gangway.
Do you mind if I have a look? I would like you to have a look before I put money down. Just watch where you step so you don't fall through."
As he followed Ferris down the gangway, Destin thought, maybe this will actually work. Chapter 8. Ruthless. Evan knew from the beginning of this partnership that he was being played by someone adept at identifying vulnerabilities and exploiting them. He was definitely being wooed. He just wasn't sure to what purpose. "Don't trust him," he thought. "You trusted Captain Strangward, and look what happened. The Empress is still out there, and she may be hunting for you. You can't afford to trust anyone." Yet he couldn't say no. What the Wetlander offered was impossible to resist. If it was an elaborate trap, the soldier was going to considerable trouble and expense when hitting Evan over the head and delivering him to Deepwater Court would work just as well. The bottom line was that he wanted to trust Destin Karn. He wanted to believe in this ship of dreams they were building. As partners, they complemented each other like the two halves of a locket. Though both spoke common, Destin was baffled by Evan's use of maritime terms and directions. Evan knew the basics of ship's carpentry when it came to minor repairs, and he had the barn-building experience behind him, but he was no engineer, and neither had ever built a ship. Fortunately, it was more of a repair job than a scratch build. Evan made a list of materials, and Destin sourced them somehow. Tall, clear pine for masts and spars brought down from the Dragonback Mountains. Iron and wood fittings, lanyards, rope, wire, blocks, and the like from the shipyard at the port. Tools such as prickers, heavers, mallets, and spikes. He ordered sails from the sailmakers, too. Given that it was just the two of them, anything that could be bought ready-made or contracted out, he did. Destin seemed to have a lot of money at his disposal, and he spent it freely. He was also ingenious at devising ways to reduce the numbers needed to crew the ship. It was sometimes an advantage that he had no crew experience. He wasn't bound by past practice or maritime custom, and so he asked questions about why things were done a certain way and whether they could be done differently. For example, he devised a system of bilge pumps driven by the motion of the ship through water to free up hands for other tasks. It didn't take long for Kadar to notice the activity around the ketch. First, two of his ruffins came, demanding paperwork proving Destin and Evan had permission to trespass aboard the ship. After Destin proved ownership of the vessel, there came two of Kadar's rent collectors, demanding back payments for the slip space. In response, Destin showed his deed to the dockage. Finally, the big man himself appeared, strolling down the dock to their end. He stood, watching them work for a few minutes.
"You should be taking this work to the shipyard," he said finally, pointing toward his own establishment across the harbor. "This space ain't meant for shipbuilding." "We're not shipbuilding," Destin said. "Just doing some dockside repairs." "You look familiar," Kadar said, scowling. "Haven't we met before?"
"We have," Destin said. "My name's Rochefort. I came to you asking about a pilot."
"Rochefort?"
Evan's head came up, but he realized right away that it wasn't his partner's real name. Recognition flooded into Kadar's face.
"Now I remember. But you never followed up."
"That's because I found one," Destin said, pointing at Evan.
During all this, Evan had kept his hands busy, letting Destin handle the heat from the dock boss. Now he waved and smiled, enjoying Kadar's stunned reaction for a few precious seconds, before he went back to Wolding the Mainmast.
You hired him?
Kadar roared.
He works for me!
Destin shrugged.
He said he needed work, and I needed work done, so we came to terms.
He's not a shipwright, Kadar said. If he told you he is, he's lying.
Destin pointed at the rigging rising behind him.
So far, so good. I'm impressed.
Ferris is a pilot, and I have a job for him now.
Destin, raising an eyebrow, looked at Evan.
I wish I'd known,
Evan said, conjuring up a look of regret.
But now I'm under contract. Mr. Rochefort offered steady work, so I took it.
That's fine for now, but what are you going to do when this job is finished?
Kadar tilted his head back, looking at Evan through narrowed eyes.
Don't come crawling to me, then. You need to be available when I offer you a contract.
I anticipate this will be a long-term engagement, if not permanent,
Destin said. He made a show of pulling out his pocket watch.
Now, I'm not paying this man to talk. You'll need to continue your conversation later.
Don't worry, Kadar snarled. I will.
Evan swung down from the rigging, and they watched, side by side, as Kadar stalked away.
Well, he's pissed again, Evan said.
Do you think so?
Destin said, as if unimpressed.
His thugs will be back tonight, Evan said. We'll have to sleep on board. For one night, maybe.
He's ruthless.
I'm ruthless, Destin said.
Evan cleared his throat, avoiding Destin's eyes.
I'd prefer not to use Majory, he said. It might draw attention we don't want.
He meant from the Empress, though he knew by now that Destin and Francis were on the run as well.
Never fear, Destin said. We're not just mages. We are engineers.
In late afternoon, Evan left off working and strolled down to the fish market. After haggling with one of the dragnetters, he came away with an entire basketful of purchases. In the meantime, Destin did his shopping at the city market. Once darkness fell, the two of them met on the pier next to their ship and spent the next hours making ready. Their work finished, they returned to their ship to wait. Just after the moon had set, a crowd of men gathered at the gate to the pier where the ketch was moored. They were muffled in cloaks and carried axes and clubs. Several were carrying torches, maybe in case something needed to be set on fire. Their leader cut through the lock on the gate, and they swarmed through. They hadn't gone more than a few steps farther when there was a snicking sound, and the men in the lead began screaming. With that, the entire section of the dock collapsed into the water. Evan and Destin were sharing a late supper on the quarterdeck, sitting next to the rail, positioned so that they could look down at the pier.
They found the dragon traps,
Destin said, sipping his cider,
and the tripwires. Let's see if that stops them. I think it's fair to say that the ones that found the dragon traps won't be coming aboard tonight,
Destin said, his voice cool and matter-of-fact.
They're already at the bottom of the harbor.
Evan shifted his weight. He suspected he knew some of the men in the water. Most of Kadar's enforcers were mean as badgers, though.
Should we do something to help them?
Destin shook his head, his lips quirking in amusement.
If our positions were reversed, what do you think they would do?
He said.
Let's see if their colleagues help them out.
Below, men were still thrashing in the water next to the pier, but some had swum to the dock and were climbing up the pilings. Spitting like cats, they hauled themselves up onto the planking on the shore side of the gap. One man lay groaning on the dock, gushing blood, his left leg gone below the knee. Evan's stomach flipped. He'd seen his share of bloodshed while crewing for Strangward, but always at a distance. Now he'd been 2 years away from it, and it seemed that his thick skin had been sandpapered away. Destin surveyed the scene, eyes narrowed, as if tallying up the score in a game of nicks and bones. When he looked up and saw Evan's stricken expression, he grunted.
"This is what it takes to survive, pirate. These are the stakes in the game we're playing."
By the time everyone who hadn't drowned was out of the water, there were only 6 men milling about, soaked and unhappy from the swearing that was going on. None of them went back into the water to look for the missing. Nobody seems particularly eager to continue the mission, either. Finally, one of them raised his club and shouted,
"Come on, boys! Let's break her up!"
They split up, each man claiming one of the hawsers. The first man gripped the line and began to climb. But halfway up, he shrieked and let go, flailing and dropping back onto the dock with a blood-curdling crunch. 2 more ended up back in the water, screaming in pain.
"What's that called again?"
Destin peered through the railing, surveying the chaos below.
"Sea nettle," Evan said. "It's a kind of jellyfish. The tentacles deliver a really nasty sting, even days after they're detached. Some of the healers use them, but personally, I'd rather die."
The dockside raiders had seen enough. Collecting their wounded, they stampeded back up the pier and disappeared into the twisty streets surrounding the harbor.
"Ruthless," Destin said, raising his glass.
"Ruthless," Evan said, and drank deeply, his mind in turmoil.
He'd been on his own since he was a 10-year, and nobody would describe his life on the harbor front as sheltered. But he felt like a temple novice next to Destin Karn. Evan didn't know his story, not yet anyway, but clearly the wetland soldier had lessons to teach him about survival in a brutal world. Was that what made the soldiers so attractive? The sense that nothing was off the table? There was one more attempt on the catch, which they repelled once again. That same night, the newly refurbished New Moon caught fire and burned to the waterline. The next morning, Evan and Destin walked down the quay to where Kadar stood glaring at the smoking hull.
"Too bad," Evan said. "She was a fine ship."
He shook his head sadly.
"What's the world coming to?"
"What the hell do you mean?"
Kadar said, looking him up and down.
"Last night, for the second time, somebody attacked our ship too," Evan said. "And now this."
He gestured toward the New Moon.
"Do you think it's the same people?"
Kadar was momentarily speechless, which was a fine thing.
"Look," Destin said, "I might own the mooring, but it seems to me that, as dock boss, you should provide better security." "Go suck the breaker's balls," Kadar said, regaining his voice and demonstrating his usual eloquence.
"It's to your advantage to make sure there are no more incidents," Destin said.
His gaze swept over the ruins of the New Moon and across the array of ships in the harbor and buildings at dockside.
"This whole harbor could go up if it were to catch fire."
"Is that a threat?"
"Not at all," Destin said, looking him in the eye. "I'm the one that's asking you to make sure there will be no more problems."
Kadar, a muscle working in his jaw, stood with his eyes locked on Evan for a long moment. Was it a threat, a promise, or an acknowledgement of defeat? It was impossible to tell. The dock boss turned on his heel and walked away. Kadar hadn't said yes, and he hadn't said no, but there were no more incidents at the pier. Chapter 9. destiny. When the day arrived for freeing the ship, Francis, Evan, and Destin took a wagon laden with provisions down to the waterfront. Breaker rode along, curled up in Destin's lap, as if he knew they were going somewhere and didn't want to be left behind. "We're only going to be gone 3 days," Evan thought, shouldering a bag of lentils and carrying it up the gangway while Destin rolled casks of water and wine on board. Evan was used to a shipboard diet of hardtack and salt pork. When the provisions kept coming, he spoke up.
"With just the two of us, we're going to have to focus on sailing, not cooking," he said, "especially when one of us is as green as grass. You've packed enough to take us to Baston Bay and back."
With that, Frances stopped in her tracks and swung round to face her son, who all but ran into her.
"You're not planning to do something reckless, are you? Is that what this is all about?"
For what seemed like a long time, they looked at each other, silent messages rippling through the space between them. Obviously, this was a follow-up to conversations Evan had not been privy to.
"Of course not, Mother," Destin said. "At least nothing more reckless than setting sail in a ship built by a pirate and a sword-dangler."
As if unconvinced, she turned to Evan.
"Promise me you'll stay on this side of the Indio," she said, gripping both his hands. "Don't let him talk you into going farther. Promise me you'll be back in 3 days."
Evan, uneasy at being put in the middle, looked from Francis to Destin.
"I'm planning on 3 days," he said. "This ship needs a larger crew for a crossing, even with the changes Destin's made."
"Listen to him, Destin," Francis said. "He's the expert."
"Of course he is," Destin said in the soothing voice of the practiced deceiver.
Frances lowered her voice.
"I've lost so much. I don't want to lose you too."
"Trust me, I have no intention of risking my life, my investment, and 6 months of hard work by sailing an untried vessel across the ocean, especially with me as crew."
Francis kept gazing at him until he said, with a flicker of irritation,
"Mother, please, let's get this ship properly launched before she grows a crop of barnacles sitting here at the dock."
Destin had asked Evan to name their new ship.
"It's your ship," Evan had protested. "You should name it."
Destin shook his head.
"No, it's your ship. You're the master. Francis and I are just the money." "We could name it the Francis," Evan suggested. "If we're going to have a fleet," Destin said, "we need names that will connect them together."
"We're going to have a fleet? And then we're going to have a fleet?" That sounded like a promise of sorts. Evan thought a moment.
"Destiny," he said. "Destiny?"
Destin scowled.
"You cannot name it after me." "I didn't," Evan said. "That's a good name for a ship, and it opens up lots of possibilities for other ships. Alacrity, temerity, mutiny."
When Destin kept scowling, he said,
"You were the one who wanted me to name it."
Evan set out the tools for the ceremony. A curved Carthian blade, a small cask of wine, and a large silver cup, provided by Francis, emblazoned with an elaborate C. He ran his thumb over the engraving. Was that their initial? Destin C? That was as far as he could go. Evan wasn't all that familiar with wetland names.
"Are you sure about the cup?"
Evan asked for the third or fourth time. Francis shrugged.
"I have no need of silver cups these days," she said.
Then eyeing the blade, she said,
"I hope you don't plan to sacrifice a goat and make us drink the blood. The goats I need."
No goats, Evan said. That whole blood sacrifice thing went away 5 or 10 years ago.
Strictly speaking, this wasn't a new ship, so the ceremony wasn't necessary. But it was a new venture, and a new name, and they were in the mood to celebrate. Not to mention that they needed the gods on their side. Evan spiked the cask and let wine flow into the cup until it was full. A bit self-consciously, he raised the cup.
We, the builders of this ship, offer her up to the gods of ocean, sea, and storm, and ask for safe passage beyond the shoals and to safe harbor wherever our journey may end.
He drank from the cup and passed it to Francis, who drank, and then to Destin, who drank and returned it to him. Evan stopped, collected himself, but couldn't bring himself to seek the protection and guidance of the gods under a false name. He began again.
I, Evan Strangward, pilot, humbly ask for the skill and courage to chart a true course in fair weather and foul, while this ship is under my command.
Evan drank. Looking over the rim of the cup, he saw Francis stiffen at the last-minute swap of names. But Destin seemed unperturbed. He already knew, Evan thought. Once again, suspicion flickered through him. Was it possible that Destin had been working for the Empress all along? Was this just a ruse to deliver him to her new capital in Seliskard? No. Why would Destin spend 6 months building a ship that he didn't know how to sail? Besides, only a fool would set sail for the Northern Islands with a weather mage like Evan at the helm. And Destin was no fool.
Pirate!
Evan looked up, startled, to find Destin checking the time on an imaginary pocket watch.
Quit sailing off inside your head, and let's get this done. I name this ship Destiny, and commend her to the care of the gods of ocean, sea, and storm, and ask that they welcome her when she sets forth, and give her up when she returns to shore.
Evan splashed the wine over the gleaming varnish, newly emblazoned with the name. He raised the empty cup.
To the gods of ocean, sea, and storm, I commit this silver cup in compensation for their rightful claim to sailors and their ships.
With that, he cocked back his arm and then sent the cup sailing out into the harbor, where it splashed down in the distance. Now he nodded to Francis, who descended the gangway to the shore. Breaker found a perch on the quarterdeck. Evan and Destin raised the gangway and slid it into its rack. Evan took his position, where he could manipulate the sheets and get enough canvas to ease away from the pier. Destin raised the curved blade and sliced through the hawser.
I set you free, Destiny, he said,
and then took his place at the helm. And so they were underway. Once away from the pier and the other moorings, Evan loosed more canvas, and their little ship leapt forward, as if eager to claim her freedom after so long mired at the dock. They threaded their way through the mouth of the harbor, passing in and out of the cool shadow cast by the pillars on either side, the sun dragons glittering in the sun. Destin stood on the quarterdeck like a figurehead, gloved hands on the wheel, his long weather coat rippling around him. He tipped his head back, gazing up at the sculptures as they passed between them.
Have you learned how to use the dragons?
Maybe, Evan said.
Destin looked amused, then swung around, bracing himself against the sudden force of the winds as they passed into the open sea.
30 degrees to larboard, helmsman, Evan called.
Destin shot a panicked look back at him, clearly searching through the nautical phrases and orders they'd practiced. Then he collected himself and said,
"Aye, aye, Captain."
He turned forward, checked the compass, and adjusted their course southwest. Evan had charted a course far enough offshore to be forgiving, but close enough that they could seek an anchorage when they desired one. Despite Evan's limited ability to manage the sails on his own, and Destin's lack of experience at the helm, Destiny turned out to be a nimble and responsive vessel, even with her novice crew. Through the day, they traded places, each playing multiple roles in navigation, piloting, and trimming the sails. They sang sea shanties as they worked, which grew filthier and filthier as the day wore on. That first night, they sailed through, each taking 3-hour watches. On the second day, with Destin more comfortable trimming the sails and handling the steering, Evan experimented with manipulating the wind and currents. He found that by using weather magic and Destin's amulet, he could more than compensate for their skeleton crew. Soon they were flying, whooping with joy, sails taut and spray needling their faces. "I could sail on like this forever," Evan thought, "and never touch shore again." The second night, having made good time, they anchored in a small cove. Evan cooked fish and lentils in the tiny galley, while Destin fussed with a self-steering device he'd devised. He mounted it to the stern of the boat, and then squirmed through the cabin, hauling lines to the tiller. When he was finished, Evan eyed it with deep skepticism. "How does it work?" Destin ran his fingers lovingly over a flat wooden blade that stuck up in the air.
"This senses a change in the wind, which moves the tiller, which changes the direction of the ship to the most favorable point of wind. What if that puts us off course?"
Destin shrugged.
"It's not for navigating in tight places. It's more for what you call blue water sailing, crossing large bodies of water where you're not likely to run into anything. It allows for more flexibility with a small crew."
He laughed at Evan's expression.
"Don't worry, Captain," he said. "It won't put you out of a job." "We'll try it when we're both awake and watching," Evan said. "Let's eat."
They spiked a cask of cider and ate on the deck, side by side, their backs against the cabin wall, hips touching. Wavelets lapped against the hull, and seabirds dove at them, scolding, hoping for a handout. Destin poured more cider for both of them. When he passed Evan the cup, their fingers touched briefly. He said,
"I'll give you fair warning, pirate. I'm plying you with cider, because persuasion doesn't work. If we're going to work together, I'll need some answers." "What if cider doesn't work?"
Evan said, stretching out his legs and wiggling his toes.
"Then I'll have to find something that does,"
Destin said, pinning him to the wall with those smoke and whiskey eyes. Evan straightened, his heart beginning to hammer. What the hell did that mean? With this boy, there were so many possibilities. The soldier clearly wanted something from him. Was it something Evan would be willing to give? To distract himself, he tossed a bit of fish to the gulls. That turned out to be a huge mistake. Flocks descended on them in waves of black beaks and gray and white, so that he had to drive them off with a gust of wind. Breaker charged back and forth across the quarterdeck, but came away with nothing more than feathers.
"So, Lucky Ferris is not your real name," Destin said, with an air of getting down to business.
"No," Evan said, leaving off bird herding.
"I'm so relieved. I have a hard time saying Lucky Ferris with a straight face."
Evan laughed.
"Why did you change it?" "Right now, certain people think I'm dead, and I'd like to keep it that way," Evan said.
He paused, debating whether to go on. Joining up with Destin had given him the leverage he needed to stand up to Kadar. Without Destin, he'd be begging for crumbs at the harbor master's table, waiting for someone to betray him to Celestine. After more than 6 months, Destin was still keeping secrets. Yet Evan had to find a way to trust somebody. He couldn't go it alone forever. He couldn't help hoping that he would find a new life and a livelihood with Destin by his side. Ship of dreams. And so, taking a deep breath, Evan went all in. He told Destin about his life on the streets of Endru, his recruitment by Strangward, the encounter with the Empress off Tarvos, and his escape from the ship and the Empress's blood-sworn crew. Destin raised an eyebrow.
"So, do you think you're the long-lost heir to the Nazari throne? If I were, I hardly think Celestine would want to take me alive. She'd want to eliminate the competition. Is that why you declined the honor? I don't trust Celestine. Right now, I don't trust anyone." "Always a good policy," Destin murmured, sliding him a look, as if questioning Evan's decision to trust present company. "This mage mark you're talking about, may I see it?" Evan shrugged. "Why not? Maybe you'll have some insights."
He bowed his head, pushing his hair out of the way.
"Captain Strangward said that I needed to keep it hidden, or it would stir up the crew." "What the hell?"
Destin's breath warmed the back of Evan's neck, and his fingers whispered over his skin.
"Can you feel that?"
"Yes."
Gods, yes, he could feel it. "There's definitely magic in it, though maybe it's just drawing it out of you. Have you heard any stories about the Nazari mages carrying any sort of badge or marking?"
"No."
Evan shivered, acutely conscious of Destin's fingers on his skin.
"What do you see?"
Despite repeated gymnastics with a mirror, Evan had never been able to get a good look at it.
"It's abstract, but it resembles wavelets, clouds piled in a pyramid, like a storm is coming, lightning bolts. Weather, basically."
He tapped it.
"Is this what the Empress wants?" "I don't know, but she definitely knows about it. It seemed to... It began to burn when she got close enough."
"Was it a warning or a greeting?"
Destin murmured, as if to himself.
"Have you tried to pry it off?"
"No!"
Evan turned abruptly, and they were all but nose to nose.
"It doesn't come off."
"Don't worry,"
Destin said, his hands still loosely circling Evan's neck, his eyes fixed on his lips.
"I don't want to hurt you,"
he said, his voice thick and wistful. All at once, as if coming to his senses, he jerked back his hands and dropped them into his lap, as if he'd been caught reaching for a forbidden treat. Evan sat back, cheeks burning, heart racing, disappointment mingling with relief.
"You are in deep water, pirate, and you've forgotten how to swim. Do not fall for this dangerous, moody, mercurial boy. It will lead to heartbreak, or worse."
Destin scowled, lips pressed tightly together, as if weighing the pros and cons of opening them again. But what came next was not a confession of love, but a major change in subject.
"Not everyone is convinced by your recent death, pirate. The Empress Celestine is still looking for you."
"What?"
This came as a shout that sent the gulls spiraling away.
"How do you know?"
"I took a trip up the coast. Some of the blood-sworn mages you describe were stationed on the quay in every port, watching comings and goings. Most of the taverns have posted placards offering a reward for your capture and delivery to Seliskard.
It's probably a blessing that Kedar hasn't given you any contracts lately.
So, you've known this all along?
Anger rose up inside Evan, mingled with mortification. So much for his heartfelt confession. So much for his fragile hope of sanctuary.
Easy, pirate, Gaston said. I haven't known it all along, but I've known it for a while. But you didn't see fit to share it with me.
Destin shrugged.
So you've been spying on me.
I have been gathering information, yes, Destin said, without a trace of remorse.
I need to know who I'm partnering with.
Partnering? Evan's mouth went dust dry.
Could you be more specific?
I have a business proposal for you, pirate,
Destin said abruptly, as if signaling that the time for moonstruck yearning was over.
I'd like to set you up here in Tarvos. You have one ship now, and eventually you'll have more. You hire a crew, security, all of that. You'd like to set me up?
That was an unfortunate use of language.
Exactly, Destin said, rushing ahead. With my money and your talent, you should have no trouble making a go of it.
Clearly, this soldier was not used to charming his way to a yes.
This is all very generous, Evan said warily. But what's in it for you? I want you to look after my mother, Destin said. She's very fond of you, and I believe it's mutual. My share of the profits will go to her, for her support. I would ask that you stay at the cottage with her when you're not at sea, and hire staff to make sure she gets the help and protection she needs. She's a strong woman, but she's no soldier, and she'll need help for some of the heavy work.
Ah, Evan said, hope ebbing.
And where will you be?
Destin's face closed like the steel door to a vault.
I have business elsewhere.
Where?
Destin returned his gaze impassively.
Are you coming back?
I hope so, Destin said, making no promises.
If I don't, the business will be all yours, with a split to Francis. So, what do you say? Can we be partners?
It was an astonishingly generous offer. A suspiciously generous offer. And Evan was tired of being blindsided and trampled by this wetland soldier mage. He shook his head.
It's your turn, he said. My turn? I need to know who I'm partnering with, he said, taking great pleasure in mimicking Destin's phrase. I don't even know your real name, or where you came from, exactly, or the source of your money, or who might show up at my door, hunting you, and find me instead.
Destin stared at him for a long moment.
My real name is Destin, he said finally. That's a start, Evan said. Go on.
He settled back, gesturing, as if anticipating a long story.
What's wrong with you? Destin said furiously. You're refusing the most generous... That's just it, Evan said. It's too good to be true. Just like Strangward taking me on as crew, and Celestine wanting to take me home and spoil me. I'm learning that whenever this happens, I should run the other way. If you can trust me to look after your mother, you can trust me with your story, too.
Destin sat looking at him, fists clenched, frustration churning in his hazel eyes.
A partnership implies an equal footing, Evan said softly. Take or leave.
Chapter 10 Old Stories and New Beginnings. Destin leaned his head back against the pilot house, seething, fighting down the urge to throttle Evan Strangward. This was oddly mingled with the desire to kiss him until their lips bled. "You are your father's son," he thought. "There is no love without pain." This was not in the plan he'd crafted so carefully. He'd been blinded by a pretty face. He'd underestimated the pirate, and that was all. By now, the sun had plunged below the horizon, leaving a bloody wake on the Indio. The first stars had emerged overhead, glittering diamonds in the vault of the sky. At long last, the gulls had gone to roost, leaving it blessedly quiet, except for the lapping of the waves in the cove and the rattle of the rigging in the freshening breeze.
"Well," Evan said with a sigh, "it seems that we are done here. I'm sure there are some sails that need hemming, and bilges that need pumping." He made as if to get to his feet.
"No," Destin growled. "We're not finished."
Evan settled in again, wrapping his arms around his knees. The wind stirred his hair, and the dying sun glittered on the silver and blue amid the gold.
"Is there anything in particular you'd like to know?"
Destin said, chewing each word thoroughly to keep the wrong thing from spilling out.
"Who's the general?"
Like any good marksman, Evan had zeroed in on the critical target.
"General Merrin Khan, commander of the Army of Arden and counselor to the king," Destin said. "My father."
All traces of triumph faded from the pirate's face.
"Your father? Your own father is hunting you?"
Destin nodded.
"He's not the kind you can live with. Neither is he the kind you can leave. I was not the son he'd hoped for."
He held up a hand.
"I don't know if anyone would have suited him, but I was definitely the songbird in the eagle's nest. Or, should I say, the hawk's. He kept pounding on my mother, trying to get her to admit to cheating on him. He didn't want to believe I was really his."
He paused for a beat.
"That's one thing we agreed on. I didn't want to believe it either."
But Evan had seemingly tripped over something he'd said midway through.
"What do you mean, he pounded on her?" "He beat her all the time," Destin said, matter-of-fact. "Half to death once or twice. Sometimes at court, but mostly at his keep on the Bittersweet. He kept a full-time mage healer to patch her up again." "But that... why would he do that?" Evan growled. "And why would she put up with it? In Karthus, any man who treated a woman like that would never dare close his eyes." "Things are different in Arden," Destin said. "Everyone puts up with something, women most of all. The fact that my father is a mage made it even more difficult to fight back. If he didn't love her, then why couldn't he just set her aside and marry someone else?" "Love?" Destin shook his head. "For a pirate, you're a romantic sort." "Yes," Evan said, a shadow crossing his face. "I guess I am. A mage is a precarious thing to be in the Wetland Empire, because of the church," Destin said. "The king finds us useful, but he is as changeable as spring weather when it comes to the tension between magic and religion. My mother is the daughter of a powerful thane. That marriage gave the general a route to power he wouldn't have had otherwise, and so, of course, he resented her. Plus, he wanted her to have a litter of boys, so he could choose out the most promising one and drown the rest of us. But there was only me. He accused her of using maidenweed to keep from having more children. He was always accusing her of something."
He trailed off.
"He sounds like a monster," Evan said.
Oh, he is. He started beating me, too, once I was too big to ignore, and still too small to defend myself. My mother and I, we kept hoping he'd be killed in the war. But once a man gets to be a general, he sees less of the actual fighting, you know?
Evan nodded, his green eyes fixed on Destin's face, as if afraid to look away.
He was getting worse and worse, especially when he came home at the end of the marching season.
Now that Destin had started talking about it, it was as if a dam had burst, and his words flooded out without the usual editing. Maybe it was more like lancing a boil.
The war wasn't going well, and the king and the Thane Council were putting pressure on my father. Whenever the general was under pressure, he would take it out on us.
Destin brushed his fingers over his cheekbone, which still ached in damp weather.
So, this one day, he hit me, and I gut-stabbed him.
He'd ambushed the pirate again.
You what? I gut-stabbed him.
Destin flexed his hand, as if gripping the hilt of a knife.
I wanted him to die slowly. I'd been practicing, and it should have killed him. Eventually. But it didn't kill him,
Evan said.
No, it didn't. If I had it to do over again, I'd have opened his throat and stabbed him through the heart with a poisoned blade and cut off his head and hung it over my door.
Destin's voice shook just a little before he could get it back under control.
Suffering is all well and good, but I wanted him gone.
Evan stared at him with a stricken expression.
See, pirate, you wanted to know who you were partnering with. Happy now? All that, and no majory,
Evan said finally, as if trying to lighten the mood.
He wears a talisman,
Destin said. When Evan looked puzzled, he added,
Protection against majory, remember? Anyway, the use of majory would have pointed a finger at me. So your father survived, and you ran. So we ran. Is there a price on your head? Will the king hang you if you're caught? The king?
Destin laughed.
He's the least of my worries. My father probably didn't even see fit to mention it to him.
He paused, waiting for a question that didn't come. So he continued.
The general wouldn't want the king to know that a 13-year-old stripling could get to him. 13?
Evan said.
Destin nodded. 15 now. We've been on the run for 2 years, sometimes one step ahead of the general. He wouldn't want to admit that my mother had left him. That would get her family asking questions. If he involved the king, it would tie his hands. No, he'll handle it himself. Do you really think he's looking for you after 2 years? I mean, with the war and the king, he's got... As long as the bastard's alive, he'll be looking for us,
Destin said.
Like I told you, he's not the kind you can leave. Tarvos is our last option. I'm sorry,
Evan said.
I don't want your sympathy,
Destin said.
I want your help. Why can't you just say yes, like any reasonable person? When someone offers you a ship and a home and a bag of money, you say yes. If you want my help, you need to be straight with me, and not try to gammon me like an easy mark. I may be a waterfront rat, but I'm not stupid. I deserve that, I suppose.
Evan rolled his eyes.
Yes, you do. So, now, if you plan to leave me with your mother, then where do you plan to be? None of your business,
Destin wanted to say, but he knew that wouldn't get him where he wanted to go.
I plan to go back home and finish the job I started,
Destin said.
That is the only way to end this. You mean to kill the general?
Yes.
Understanding kindled in the pilot.